Hello and welcome to the Ghosts and Folklore podcast. I'm Mark Rees, and on each episode, I investigate a different, weird, and wonderful subject. And on this episode, we are going to explore two real-life, long-lost accounts of haunted houses. Two haunted houses that reveal eerie accounts of death and murder and secret burials and all manner of horrific crimes that transformed these once normal houses into haunted houses. But I don't want to give away all of the surprises here in the introduction, so before there's any spoilers, let us jump straight in to the first story. And so, to begin at the beginning. And according to our narrator, the first account is a real thriller. A real thriller. And no, they weren't Michael Jackson, but nevertheless, they describe this story as a thriller. And it takes place in a house called Glanwern, 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 in the south of Wales, which sadly is a bit vague. This is one of those stories where the exact location has, I am assuming, purposefully been kept a secret. I mean, there are a few locations today where this could potentially be, and if there are any budding detectives listening who want to try and work this out, please be my guest. But wherever this took place, even though we don't know the exact location, that shouldn't detract from the story itself. And we are told that Glanwern in South Wales is a place where several mysterious tales are told, but the most interesting one, and undoubtedly the most authentic, is the one I am about to tell you. So, this is a very haunted property by all accounts, and the number one ghost story, and the most authentic, is the account you are about to hear. And these particular events were recalled by a Miss Travers, who was invited to stay at the house in the early 1900s, so we're looking at roughly 100 years ago. A century ago, Miss Travers arrived at Glanwern. She was shown to her room, and our narrator tells us that she didn't find it the most welcoming, shall we say, of rooms, because, to quote, "Although there was nothing remarkable about the appearance of the room that was given her, it struck her at once with an odd feeling of nervousness, a feeling that increased so much when she was left alone for the night that, having no nightlight, she determined to keep both of her candles burning." So this room made her feel so nervous, she was so on edge, especially after dark, that she decided she would not sleep in the darkness, she would keep her candles burning all night long. And to continue, as she lay in bed that first night, the hours dragged by, and Miss Travers found sleep simply out of the question. Suddenly, towards 1 o'clock, a sound broke the heavy stillness of the night, exactly as if somebody had violently pushed open her door and rushed into the room. Imagine her alarm, our narrator says, and it should be quite easy to imagine that. I mean, she's lying in a strange bed in a room that makes her nervous, and suddenly the door is flung open violently. Something rushed in. And it gets worse, and we are told her alarm grew all the greater, not by what she saw, but because of what she did not see. In fact, nothing was to be seen, only heard, and there followed a succession of noises resembling the shuffling of feet about the floor and struggles as of people fighting. So, I think it's safe to say that all in all, it was quite an unnerving experience. Frankly, the last thing you want when you're sleeping in a strange bed at night is to hear your bedroom door opening and the sounds of people entering, walking around, scuffling and fighting around you, despite being unable to see anything. But the good news is that the sounds were short-lived. After a while, the sounds ceased. Although, by this point, the damage had been done, and we are told that poor Miss Travers, too terrified to move, lay quaking. And how she got through the night, she never knew. 4, in an hour or so, the same thing occurred again. Can you believe it? A repeat performance. The door was burst open and the shufflings and strugglings went on as before. In fact, the invisible performance happened 4 times during the night. But on the 4th occasion, the struggle seemed to cease very abruptly. And the next sound Miss Travers heard was distinctly that of a heavy body being dragged across the floor towards the door. And as this occurred, she felt a horrible and indescribable sensation of intense cold pass over her like a wave. So I think we can say things escalated quite quickly here. These sounds continued throughout the night. They returned 4 times in total and only came to an end after she distinctly heard the sound of a heavy body being dragged across the floor towards that open doorway. Now, putting aside the obvious questions like, why didn't she just leave the room after the first occasion? Why did she stick around during the second and the third and the fourth occasions? And more importantly, how did she know what the sound of a body being dragged across a floor sounded like? I mean, that's certainly something I'm not particularly familiar with. And if I was still doing sound effects regularly on this podcast, it's something I would struggle to recreate. But nevertheless, in the light of day, the next morning, she did come to her senses, and she did resolve not to spend another night in that room alone. She wasn't completely mad, 4 times was enough. She resolved not to spend another night alone, and under the plea of feeling nervous, so she didn't use ghosts as an excuse, she said she was just nervous in that room and asked one of the daughters of the house if they would mind swapping rooms, if they would mind switching for the remainder of her stay. And fearing incredulity, she said nothing about these events to anyone in the house. She didn't mention it to her hosts for the remainder of her stay, and she felt pretty relieved that she hadn't by the end, because it turns out nothing else happened after switching rooms. So she asked one of the daughters living there to swap with her. By all accounts, nothing unusual happened in the room during the daughter's stay in it. So was this connected to Miss Travers in a way? Was she just really unlucky that she chose the one night when these things occurred? Or was she in some way responsible for them? Did she attract them? If indeed it was paranormal activity, is it something she was attuned to? Did she have some psychic abilities maybe? Well, it turns out there's a little bit more to this mystery that would be uncovered afterwards. And it was while visiting somebody who lived in one of the neighbouring houses that she mentioned she'd been staying in a house nearby. And when she told them which house it was, her friend remarked, "I wonder if the ghost ever walks there now." Which isn't the kind of things friends tend to drop into conversations. Well, my friends might, but back in the day, normal friends wouldn't. "I wonder if the ghost still walks there now." And in a way, this was the confirmation she needed. It was an off-the-hand comment, but it was one that confirmed that she was not alone in experiencing whatever she had experienced. So while it wasn't good news to know that this house was supposedly haunted, after swapping rooms and nothing happening to anyone else, she was naturally starting to doubt the events. But now she has confirmation this place is supposedly haunted. It is supposedly somewhere where a ghost or ghosts are said to walk. And our intrepid ghost hunter, who recorded this story from Miss Travers, decided to dig a little bit deeper. She decided that judicious inquiry was needed to find out more about the house's grisly past. And she indeed did dig up a suitably grisly story, which starts with a more fairy tale introduction. And she tells us, once upon a time, again, possibly hiding when these events took place, or maybe because she simply doesn't know. But once upon a time, 2 brothers had lived at Glanwern, and one night they quarreled and fought so fiercely that it resulted in one killing the other and burying the body in a wood near the house. Ever since, the murderer is said to haunt the room where the tragedy occurred. Now, this story of a murder taken place in that house, in that particular room, does tie in very nicely with the sounds that she heard while staying there that night. In fact, you might say maybe they tie in a little bit too neatly. And the real question we're left with is, did she know of this story beforehand, or was she totally oblivious when she accepted that room and only discovered the finer details afterwards? Well, that is a question that will have to go unanswered for now, but if there are any budding detectives out there who do work out exactly where these events took place, and you fancy paying a visit to try and dig up some evidence, you could literally dig up some evidence if that story of a murder is true, although that is drifting into true crime territory, which is not something this podcast wants to concern itself with. All of the crimes on this podcast are strictly of a spooky nature, and I will leave the experts, the professionals, to deal with the non-spooky crimes. So, let us move on to our second account, our second haunted house, which again we are told is absolutely true. And again, it's hard to pinpoint exactly where these events took place because two or three minor details, we are told, have been changed to prevent any possible location. So our narrator is telling us up front here they have purposefully hidden the identity of the house to protect those concerned. So all we know, again, for any budding detectives, all we know is that this concerns a well-known house, or one that was well-known in the early 1900s, where a family lived in West Wales. And for the purposes of this story, the house is called Oaklands, where in the 1860s and the 1870s, it was home to a Colonel Vernon. Again, I'm assuming this name has been changed, but a Colonel Vernon, who was a widower and lived there as head of the family, so lived there with his children. And at the time of the story, he had invited a young man named Carter, the son of an old friend, to stay at Oaklands. And there was also a second guest staying there at the time of this story, a Captain Seaton, who was a frequent visitor there and a contemporary and valued friend of Colonel Vernon. So we've got Colonel Vernon, we've got his family, we've got a young man called Carter, and the Colonel's good friend Captain Seaton, plus the servants, all under one roof. And one night, young Mr. Carter stayed up reading long after his host and Captain Seaton had gone to bed, and the lights in the house had been put out. Indeed, it was nearly 1 o'clock when he lit his bedroom candle, made his way across the hall and upstairs on the way to his room. Halfway up the stairs, he stopped and turned, and from this point, he could see down the stairs into the hall, which of course was quite dark. And as he did so, we are told that he was astonished to see a light coming towards him. It was moving down the passageway which led to the foot of the stairs. So he looked back, he could see this light coming towards him, and wondering to himself, who could be awake at such a late hour? And thinking it might be one of the servants, he paused there on the stairs and was somewhat surprised to see the tall figure of a woman emerge from the passage and begin swiftly mounting the stairs. This woman was walking towards him, and she was wearing a kind of loose, flowing garment. And as she passed Carter, who had involuntarily drawn back against the wall, and I am assuming by this he is trying to hide from view in some way, to draw back so he doesn't get noticed, although of course that would be very difficult, you would think, if somebody is about to walk past you on the stairs. But he draws himself back against the wall, and from that vantage point, he stares directly at her face. And it was extraordinarily beautiful. He also noticed the candlestick she carried. It was of brilliantly polished silver, and most curiously shaped in the form of a swan. And these are important details he notices. Beyond the beauty of this figure, he notices that it is carrying a candle holder in the form of a swan. And as the lady, and lady in this sense means lady of the house, as it were, not necessarily just a female, he notices this is not a servant, this is a lady. And as this lady glides by without taking the slightest notice of him, his astonishment became curiosity. So at first he was baffled, he was astonished by what he saw, but his curiosity got the better of him. He was not scared, he was curious, curious enough to follow this figure, to see where it went. And so this woman, who had ignored Carter on the stairs, continued on her way and never turned her head, or showing by the slightest sign that she was aware of Carter's presence. She reached the landing, where she stopped a moment, then turned down the corridor where the principal bedrooms were situated. She was walking towards the sleeping quarters of the family and the friends. This was definitely not somebody heading to the servants' quarters. This is where the lady of the house might slumber. And Carter, watching, saw her stop at the third door and enter the room, the door closing softly behind her. Now, Carter was understandably a bit shocked by everything that he'd seen, but rousing himself from his surprise, he proceeded on to his own room. But the extraordinary appearance of this woman, combined with the fact that she seemingly just ignored him, and the unusual hour, and the fact that he knew of no woman inmate of the house other than the servants, produced such what is described as bewilderment of the mind that he found it impossible to sleep, which I think under the circumstances is totally understandable. But what is interesting at this point is that he still believes this is very much a woman, or a lady, I should say. His mind has not drifted towards any paranormal explanations yet. As far as he's concerned, this could just be somebody he hasn't yet met. It could be a sleepwalker. Who knows what's going on? But the very fact that I'm talking about it on this podcast is a bit of a spoiler and does suggest there is probably something unusual going on in this house. And so, to return to the tale, and early the next morning he was up and about, bright and early, and happening to meet Captain Seaton in the garden, he couldn't resist telling his fellow guest about his nocturnal experience. And so the captain listened intently, at the end of which he looked very grave indeed, and asked, at which door in the corridor did the lady stop? And when Carter replied it was the third door, Captain Seaton quickly brought the conversation to a close, only to remark that they would discuss the matter later on in private, and begged him, in the meantime, to say nothing, not a word of this, to their host. So, if he hadn't been worried before, he was certainly starting to get a bit worried now. And while he hadn't considered a paranormal explanation at the time, he was now starting to get a feeling there was something more ominous going on within this house. But he's been sworn to silence for now, and soon after breakfast, Captain Seaton asked Carter to come with him to the pantry, where they found the butler, who had worked for the Vernon family for many, many years. And never mind things sounding a bit ominous now, they're starting to sound a bit like a game of Cluedo. They're in this big fancy house, there's a mystery, they're in the pantry with the captain, and the butler, and the candlestick. Well, I haven't mentioned candlestick, well, the ghost was carrying a candlestick, but you get the idea. But the three of them are in the pantry together, and the captain leads the conversation towards the topic of the family plate, something the aged butler would know a lot about. And after the captain has spoken about how fine it is, he asks the butler to show Mr. Carter some of the most ancient and interesting pieces in the collection, which he agrees to do, and the three of them are there looking at some of the family's most valuable possessions. And we are told that much of the old silver was taken out of its wrappings and displayed. And at length, Seaton said, "But where are those queer candlesticks?" See, I told you there was candlesticks coming up, I just jumped the gun slightly. But he says, "Where are those queer candlesticks? You know the ones I mean, made in the shape of a swan." And if you've been paying attention at this point, you can probably guess where this story is heading. But he asks to see the queer candlesticks made in the shape of a swan. And the butler answered rather reluctantly that the candlesticks mentioned had been put away for many years. They had been in storage for a long, long time, and he feared they must be very tarnished. However, on being pressed, he fetched down from the high shelf in the plate cupboard a baize-covered parcel, and from it he took out a silver candlestick, very old and indeed tarnished, but the shape of which Carter was startled to see exactly resembled the one carried by the lady of his adventure. Seaton said to the butler, "You are certain you have not had these candlesticks out lately?" "Oh no, sir," answered the old man, but noticing Seaton's serious expression, his tone changed to one of alarm, and he exclaimed, "But what is the matter, sir? Has anything been seen?" "Well, as we know, something has indeed been seen." And Seaton then asked Carter to relate again what he had seen the night before, and when he heard the lady had entered the third room in the corridor, the butler broke out into a cry of, "Oh, my poor master, some grief is coming to him." After which the captain explained that the figure Carter had seen was indeed no human, but an apparition, and that her appearance, carrying the swan-shaped candlesticks, always brightly polished, always preceded trouble or misfortune to the Oaklands family. So the captain is suggesting, well, more than suggesting, he is saying that this is not the first time this apparition, as he describes it, has been seen. And more than that, to see it is not a good sign, because it signalled trouble or misfortune for the family that lived there. He adds that it was Colonel Vernon's door, the third door that she entered was Colonel Vernon's door. And the captain says that, and maybe there's an element of wishful thinking here, but the captain says, "Let us hope on this occasion her coming has not been for evil." He hopes her coming has not been for evil. And sadly, we are told his hope went unfulfilled, because before the day was over, the very next day, after the apparition had been seen on the stairs, Colonel Vernon received the news that his brother had died the night before. And while that tragic bombshell brings us to the end of this story and to the end of this episode, it does tie in with a theme I've spoken about many, many times on this podcast over the years, and that is death omens. I've spoken a lot about corpse candles and about phantom funerals and these eerie signs that predict an upcoming death. But rarely do these dire omens come in the form of what is described as a beautiful woman who glides around a haunted mansion at night holding distinctive candle holders. But it just goes to show that death omens, if indeed this be a death omen, really can come in any shape and size. And on that prophetic note, we've reached the end of another episode of the Ghosts and Folklore podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't already, please consider pressing the subscribe button. And if you really enjoyed it, you can show your support by rating it, reviewing it, and telling all your friends about it. And if you really, really, really liked it, you can support the podcast by treating me to a coffee via my website, which is always very much appreciated and helps to keep this thing on the air. If you'd like more Ghosts and Folklore, you can follow me on social media. And as well as this podcast, I've also written a number of books about similar weird and wonderful subjects, which are available from all good bookshops, offline and on. And on that note, it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. Diolch and fawr iawn am hrando. I've been Mark Rees. This has been my Ghosts and Folklore podcast, beaming to you from Wales to the world. And remember, the next time you find yourself sleeping in a strange bed, there's no need to worry if you hear the sounds of the door opening and footsteps stomping around. It's probably nothing more than the ghost of a murderer returning to the scene of their crime to reenact that grisly deed. Until next time, Nosta. Thank you.
Thank you.